strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks again for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. We're here until noon. A big thank you to Governor Ducey for joining us for 30 minutes. One of the biggest topics that's happening in Arizona and across the country is the audit. What's happening with the election audit in Arizona? They seem to have wrapped up the audit and they've wrapped up the ballot count. They are saying that ballots will be returned to Maricopa County here this week. And so joining us right now is the county recorder, Stephen Richer. Mr. Richer, let's start off with the demands and the new subpoena from the state of Arizona, from the state Senate. Let's start with your office. Part of what they're asking for are the mail-in ballot envelopes. Is that something under your control? And how much of what is under your control that they're asking for are you going to give to the state?
All right. Fantastic. Hi, Mike. How are you doing
today? Good, good.
All right, great. Are we doing 30 minutes as well?
Yeah, sure. Doing that? Listen, after everything that's going on, maybe we should do 30 minutes. So we got one segment of the show. We got about 8 minutes.
Oh, all right. Well, then we'll make it fast. Yeah, look, the Senate propounded new subpoenas on the Board of Supervisors. You are right in that some of the things that are in that are actually under my statutory control. They also submitted public records requests to us. We are processing those. We will handle those as we would any public records request, which is that we will produce things that are responsive and are tailored to the specific materials that they're looking for. We did actually already deliver all of the digital images of the envelopes, and so we're a little confused as to why they wouldn't have those. But, you know, we'll look at re-downloading those and resending to them if they've perhaps misplaced them.
All right. So Ken Bennett, Senate liaison for this, resigned, unresigned. He's in. He's out. But there's an obvious rift between some people involved in the audit and Ken Bennett. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit like that Katy Perry hot and cold song where every day it's every hour it's changing right now. And, you know, my heart goes out to Ken. He's a good guy. I believe he has approached this with good intentions throughout. And as you know, he was the only one with any sort of previous elections experience who's at all involved in this project. And so it is disconcerting when he says some of these processes have been opaque and when he hasn't even been involved in it and he's questioned some of their practices. You know, last I heard, he's back in, but in a limited capacity. And, you know, our understanding from the judicial ruling in late February was that the Senate was supposed to be exercising oversight of all of these processes. And if Ken's not doing that, then who is? And then new information came out yesterday that, you know, basically 99% of the funding is coming from outside sources. So really, who's the master of these activities at this point?
When are you getting the ballots back from the auditors?
Yeah, the way they phrased that was charitable to them because we're the ones that are going there today and picking them up and taking them back, and it's our people who are loading them. But so we're getting all the equipment back today and the ballots back today, and so everything should be back to the county by the end of the day. If we need to, we will go into tomorrow, and so, you know, that should conclude in terms of the delivery of physical equipment and materials to the Senate.
Senator Fan said recently on the show that she doesn't think that the county has cooperated at all. Do you agree with that assessment?
No. You know, my office has produced everything that we were asked for. We produced it promptly when we were originally subpoenaed. Look, we have stated that these people are not the people we would choose to work with, and they have given me every reason to know I was right. You know, I hardly want to work with people who have accused willy-nilly my office of unlawful practices. That doesn't inspire, you know, collaboration. And, you know, I'll remind the Senate that we invited them over to participate in our assessment of the tabulation equipment in early February. And Speaker Rusty Bowers was there, and I believe he had a very positive experience, but nobody from the Senate showed up, and, you know, that's unfortunate. And, you know, the other thing is that this is all premised that the county somehow did something wrong, which we wholeheartedly reject. And if that is their real premise, then they should be doing this review, not us, and it should be independent of us.
when Senator Fan had the hearing and Doug Logan from the Cyber Ninjas testified, they were throwing out a lot of numbers, 74,000 ballots and people added to the rolls and some other numbers. And they didn't make accusations, but what they did was leave open-ended questions. We don't know about this. We don't know about that. So when Senator Fan came on the show, she said that she wanted the county to sit down with her and help explain, and she called them anomalies, help explain these anomalies. Is there a scenario where you would be willing to sit down with the Cyber Ninjas and the Senate and hash out what these anomalies are and what the reality is?
Yeah, so, it was Ken Bennett who said on your show that this is very frustrating regarding that 74,000 number. He said it was frustrating that the former president of the United States repeated that claim because he knew it was inaccurate. And so, you know, they haven't been operating in the best faith when they continue to air these claims that they know are debunked. And so, you know, if they're able to do that, then we can, you know, assess and see if we can, you know, possibly work together in some capacity in the future. But our understanding all along was that they would produce a final report and then that we would be able to respond and address any of the questions that they had as evidence in that final report. Not that they would be putting this stuff out in Twitter and in these two-person hearings.
All right. So in a scenario, let's say, where this audit report comes out and they make recommendations of how things can forget about 2020 and fraud, if there are recommendations on improvement for elections, will you review those and implement some of those if you agree with them?
Of course. Absolutely. We would welcome that. You know, anyone who says this department is perfect is, you know, I guess, doesn't have any familiarity with humans because we're a human department. I ran on the platform of improving certain procedures in this, and we would welcome that. And that would be great if something positive came out of this. I think it will be lost in a lot of the histrionics about this and in the idea that what has motivated this is, in my opinion, not a very healthy cause. But, you know, if they find ways to improve our practices, we welcome that.
Well, you know that you are an elected official, so by definition, you're a politician, and you are another politician that failed on your campaign promise of making your office boring, and we're going to hold that. We're going to hold you accountable for that.
Absolutely. He's a failure. He didn't make his office boring again, and guilty as charged.
Stephen, I appreciate the sense of humor in spite of I know how stressful this can be for your office, but also your willingness to come on and talk to the audience about what's happening there. So I hope you'll do it again.
Oh, absolutely. We'll go pick up those materials now. Thanks very much, Mike.
All right. Thanks. That is Stephen Richer getting ready to jump into the U-Haul and head over and pick up the ballots. So that's an update from the county recorder's point of view on what's happening with the audit. We've talked with County Board of Supervisors members. We've talked with Ken Bennett from the audit. Now you're hearing it from the county recorder's office. Going to bring these voices on as often as we can so you can get a full rounded picture of what people are saying. Coming up in a moment, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about what we've heard this morning. And at 9:35, joining me will be the superintendent of public instruction, Kathy Hoffman. Obviously, mask mandates, requirements, requests in schools, and what it looks like with the school year moving forward with this Delta variant. All that's coming up here in just a little bit.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. Appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. Been a busy morning on the show. We are expecting the superintendent of public instruction to join us in just a few moments. I say a few moments. In about 15 minutes, we're going to talk with her about schools. An interesting conversation about what's happening with the audit. Thankfully, it looks like they are done. They are done with the audit portion of this. And there are a couple of things that happened with this that maybe people that aren't paying attention to this every day don't understand. But they did an audit. Obviously, they hired the Cyber Ninjas. They did the audit. And then after the audit was done, the Senate president said she wanted to do a ballot count, that they had a discrepancy in numbers of ballots that the county said they sent over and the Cyber Ninjas said they counted. So they did an independent count, not of votes, but of physical ballots that were counted. And so that ended, I believe, yesterday. So today, all the ballots have been boxed up. The county recorder's office is going down and picking them up and taking them back into county control. So now that we are at the very end of July, about the month of August is the concern or the time frame we believe in compiling this audit and this count of the ballots. And then hopefully before the end of the month, we are going to see a full report that will go to the Senate president. I believe it will be made available shortly after that to the county so that they can then make statements of either reply or whatever else to what's inside this audit. The concern is from a lot of people, and as Mr. Richer, Stephen Richer, was just on with us, the county recorder, is who's paying for this? And when you look at, they were ordered by a judge to release information about who is paying for it. And there is a lot of money from organizations that believe the election was stolen. Now, does that mean that there's anything nefarious going on? The answer is no, that doesn't mean that. It could be people that believe that an audit was necessary and were willing to pony up money to make sure that it happened. So I don't jump to any conclusion that something nefarious happened because of this. But what I will say is this. With the millions of dollars that have been raised, five groups were responsible providing more than $5.7 million in paying for this audit. The concern I have, along with many other people, it was the hiring of the cyber ninjas and some of the other subcontractors that they hired. Were there other reputable, and I don't mean to call these other organizations not reputable, should I say experienced organizations that could have and should have been hired to take on this task? Because ultimately, we want people to believe in what the answers are. Whatever the conclusions they come to, we want them to be believable. I've laid this case out for my friends in a pretty calm way, the ones that believe that the audit is legitimate, that the audit is necessary. And I've said to them, I was behind the audit 100% when it started. It went sideways for me with the mistakes they made. They have built the appearance that this is jaded and one-sided. I have not. I've observed it. I didn't create it, nor did anybody else. And, you know, to go through them very quickly once again, when you hire a company that admittedly had no experience in this regard as far as elections go, they made very basic elections mistakes at the very beginning. Reporters walking around a secure building, videotaping for 4 days in a row, ultimately culminating in taking video, standing right next to the ballots themselves, being near the laptops and computers that were being used by people associated with the audit. It's the appearances, there's no security. Now, they did fix it, bringing in the Arizona Rangers and others. They fixed it. But that doesn't mean that the damage wasn't done on the basis of security. So go from there to the pen issue when they were using the colored pens they weren't supposed to have near the ballots. Now, is that a major issue? I will tell you, it isn't. And if you, unless you believe that it was done intentionally to change ballots, I don't believe that. But what it does show is that the cyber ninjas and the people in charge of the volunteers had no idea about the rules of an election. There was actually a member of the media that had to tell them, you're not allowed to have those colored pens. They didn't know that. They went back and did their homework, and then they confiscated the pens and gave them the appropriate colored ink. Do I think anything nefarious was done? I've said before, absolutely not. I would never accuse Ken Bennett, Karen Fan, Randy Pullen came in later, but any of those people. And I've got to tell you, and full disclosure, I know people that were down there counting ballots. I know some of the ballot counters, some of the volunteers. They're honest, good people. Now, I don't expect you to take my word for it. I don't. But I'm telling you, they're good people. So I wasn't accusing anyone of lying. But the fact that the people heading this up didn't know that about the pens shows you their lack of experience. So I didn't pull this out of thin air. This is the appearance that they gave people. They're giving tours to people on the floor as if it's some kind of a sideshow. You've got Wendy Rogers in the state legislature with her cell phone on the floor. Mr. Bennett himself was on the floor of the count where you're not allowed to have recording devices. I've used this analogy before. In every secure building that I know of that the government owns, when they secure information, they have a room where that's secured called the SCIF. Now, the SCIF is where you keep classified documents. The rules of the SCIF are you cannot take any recording device in. It doesn't say you can't use one. It doesn't say you can't pull it out of your purse or your pocket. It says you cannot go into that room with a recording device, and you can't bring any of the papers out of that room. Those are the rules. It doesn't matter what you would do with that piece of paper when you took it out. You violated the rules by doing it. And they violated all those rules. And I just think it was the wrong thing to do. Coming up in a moment, Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman, at odds with the governor on schools and masks. We're going to ask her why and get her reaction to a lot of this in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. About an hour ago, we had Governor Doug Ducey in studio, and obviously the idea of masks and mask mandates was the first topic out of the gate. Speaking specifically about schools, one of the things we asked him about mandates and requirements, this is what he said.
In Arizona, there's no mask mandates. There's no vaccine mandates. There's no vaccine passports. I'm going to ask people to follow the law. They can also, of course, listen to the CDC and to their local doctor. I want people to use common sense. And remember, these are recommendations.
Joining us right now is the superintendent of public instruction, Kathy Hoffman. Ms. Hoffman, thanks for coming back on the show. How do you respond from what you heard of the governor this morning?
Good morning, Mike. Well, my first reaction to that is, what about in our elementary and middle schools, you know, our K-8 grade levels, where children under the age of 12 do not have access to the vaccines? They are not eligible to receive the vaccines. And so we have really lost a tool in our toolbox for our schools to not have that local decision-making authority to be able to require that people, that everyone wear masks, which is what the CDC is now recommending, because the Delta variant of COVID is highly contagious, and we know it's an airborne type spread of this virus. So I really think that this has been a setback for our schools to not be, have the local decision-making authority.
So let me be devil's advocate there. I don't think that you've lost local control when the parents can still mandate it. Like Dr. Christ on this show last week said, she's got two children too young to get the vaccine, and her children will be wearing masks when they go back to school. What makes the school districts more qualified to implement a mandate versus parents doing what's best for their children and ultimately making the decision?
Well, historically, the way the policies have worked in Arizona with local control is that if, you know, right now in 13 out of the 15 counties, we have high and substantial spread of COVID-19. So typically the school leaders would work with the county health department to determine what policies are needed to protect their communities. And I have to make very clear, at the end of the day, Governor Ducey and I are aiming for the same thing. We want kids back in the classroom, learning in person with their teachers. But if we're not doing everything we can to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in our schools, it becomes an operational nightmare. And we've already seen this. We've already had, in some of our schools that have already started this school year, there's been one district that had to close schools this week because operationally they did not have enough staff to be able to serve their students. We've had entire classrooms have to go into quarantine in other districts. So we are creating, we're not doing everything we can to prevent these types of situations. We want our kids back in the classroom learning, but when COVID-19 is spreading and people are testing positive or they're exposed and they have to, and they can't be back in the school building, then we're creating a situation that is the opposite of what Governor Ducey and I want. We want kids back in the classroom.
But don't you think if you give parents, the parents have the same access to information that you do at the, not you, but your office, but also the district level has. Informed parents will make informed decisions about their kids. Why shouldn't the parents have the final say on whether or not their children have to wear a mask to school?
I guess I just don't presume that every parent has the time to do the research, to talk to their medical experts. I know I just don't assume that every, you know, that sometimes there's language barriers, there's all kinds of challenges. So I just don't assume that everyone has the same information or the same time to do the research. And so that's why it's important for the public health experts to make recommendations and for people who are in leadership roles to provide that steady leadership of relaying the information and educating their communities about what's best practice.
Let's shift to staffing, because you alluded to that a few moments ago about staffing. How much of that staffing issue do you think is teachers leaving the profession versus teachers that are making a stand, like we saw with sick outs and other things during the pandemic in the last school year? Which do you think is more prevalent?
At this time, I would say it's neither. It's more so what we saw in the Ash Fork School District this past week is they said they had too many positive cases of staff, of essential workers, including their bus drivers and teachers, so that they unfortunately were not able to offer in-person instruction for the first for this week of school. And then they plan to resume in-person learning next week. And so what we're seeing is an operational challenge. It's the teachers want to be in the classroom, and I've already done some school visits over the past week or so, and everyone is so excited to have a great start to the school year. But we're also very disappointed that we have to deal with this again, another school year of the pandemic. So it's very frustrating, but there's also a lot of excitement and enthusiasm to get back to have a normal school year.
Kathy Hoffman is joining me. She is the superintendent of public instruction. As far as staffing goes, there's a news story printed today that there's been a slight decline in district schools, but charter schools have seen a 14% increase in staffing, and online schools 136%, which is obvious because we've switched to a lot of online with COVID. What do you attribute the increase in charter schools and the decrease in district schools to? Do you have any idea of any data on why that's happening?
Honestly, I haven't heard too many specifics about the why behind that that mobility of shifting around from district to charter. That is very interesting and something we should definitely keep looking into. But yeah, the online piece makes a lot of sense to me because we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of online programs offered here in Arizona.
Do you think that there are any positives that have come out from what, let's say, districts or what your office has learned about educating online opportunities? Is there some positive changes that came out of the forced changes because of COVID?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Arizona is known for being very innovative when it comes to education models. And I think that we're going to continue to see more of that. Now, you know, we've learned so much through the pandemic, and many of our districts and charters have now created brand new online programs, which they intend to continue offering even after the pandemic. And and then speaking with students, I have a student advisory council. And so we know from directly from our students that some of them loved learning in an online environment and they thrived. But I will say it's not for every student. You know, many students need to be in the classroom and have those wraparound supports and have more like hands-on opportunities in the classroom. But there are definitely students out there who have preferences towards online education. So I think it's great to have these options. And I think that is just another example of how innovative Arizona is.
Well, Ms. Hoffman, I appreciate the time as always. I know it's a busy time of year, and as schools are opening back up again, there's some new challenges, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to the audience about them.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. That is Kathy Hoffman, superintendent of public schools. Coming up in a moment, Gatos joins me with the Big Q poll question of the day. We had to move him because the governor was on in the 8 o'clock hour. And then we're going to talk about masks in schools, more of what the governor had to say after 10 o'clock. Both of those are coming up.
The Gatos Big Q poll question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
All right, so we've had Governor Ducey on the show. We have had the county recorder on the show. We've had the superintendent on the show. And saving the best for last, it's Gatos. What's going on, man?
There's no doubt I'm a ratings getter.
You are that.
There's no question whatsoever.
You are that.
I was watching Bar Rescue. You ever watch that?
No, I've never. I like Kitchen Nightmares. I like anything that Gordon Ramsay does, but I've not watched Bar Rescue.
I like to watch this in the morning. There's this guy who like saves these bars, right? And he monitors them for like 3 days, and then he watches like them, you know, drop like chicken wings on the ground, and then they put it on a plate and all that stuff, and you know. And then he goes in and yells at everybody, and I'm like, I want that job.
How bad do you have to be at business to screw up a bar?
Oh, you would not believe this. I mean, the kitchens are disgusting. There was this one guy who took one sip of beer and puked his brains out because the keg was on for a year, and it's supposed to be 3 months. It was awesome. Oh, puke on TV is fantastic. So I like to watch, like, something ridiculous in the morning, you know, before I get to all the stuff we've got to talk to today.
Yeah. So. I think that those shows, watching Gordon Ramsay scream at people, for some reason, I love it. It makes me laugh. Do you remember when he was here with Amy's Baking Company?
I do.
Oh, that was something else, man.
Oh, man, that was crazy.
Yeah, so.
That was crazy.
Fun to watch.
I just took a break and, you know, I pushed the pause button and I came up stairs to the Gatos 3000 to call you.
Well, I appreciate it. So,
of course.
What do you got for a question today? What are we looking at?
Amtrak is attempting to add a new route between Tucson and Phoenix.
Yep.
Three times a day.
Uh-huh.
Would you take the train to Tucson? I see that the web changed what I had.
Uh-oh.
Oh, isn't that lovely? I'm so glad I do these questions and our web department gets to change them. Well, I'll just read it the way I wrote it.
Okay.
A, yes. B, no. Who wants to go to that dump in Tucson?
Well, that is funny. It's like we got like two lanes that go to Tucson and eight that come this way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, on the 10. So, you know, it's an interesting question outside of the insult to Tucson. Do we need a heavy rail passenger train? What would be the demand to go to Tucson or back even?
Well, our kids went to U of A, so we may have taken that train because it's the worst drive ever. It really is. It's boring. It's a straight shot. It's 2 hours. There's nothing to look at.
But where other places, I lived in New York for a summer, and my friends lived in Staten Island. So we would take a bus to a heavy rail train to the Staten Island ferry to the subway to get where we wanted to go in the city. But all of that worked together and it was available in a transportation system. If you have a train from here to Tucson, how do you get to the train station? Where you're going in Tucson? You know, there needs to be more infrastructure before this is a viable option, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, seriously. And again, Tucson's a dump. I don't want to go to Tucson, but if your kids are there, I guess that's why you go.
But if you love your kids, why would you send them to Tucson if you hate it so much?
It's a great school.
Yeah, it is a great school.
It's a great school, and you know what? It's a great college town. It's just the city's just, you know, it's Tucson. It's a dump. But and you know what? Our kids didn't want to go to ASU. You know why? Because they knew that we'd be poking around there and they'd have to see us. If you go into school, go 2 hours away.
That's smart kids, by the way. That's
very smart
that
kids.
That is a great, great choice. That's incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'd rather have Phoenix to Vegas. Let's forget about Tucson and that Tucson is
now
even part of
Arizona. That's a great idea because you certainly could use that rest on the way home from Vegas on the train instead of driving.
Yes. Exactly. And that, you know what? How many times do you drive back from Vegas and there's, you know, somebody hasn't slept and then all of a sudden, boom, there's some sort of accident.
Absolutely. Gato's hysterical question today. And I'm sorry we had to move you, but look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
It's all right. Big swole.
All right. Thanks. That is Gato's. And the Big Q poll question of the day is brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. And it's over at KTAR.com. Governor Ducey was in studio with us this morning. We talked about a multitude of topics, but we do have to talk about mask wearing. We also got the other perspective from the superintendent of public instruction, who believes there should be the ability at the district level to implement mask mandates. So it's been a give and take what parents think. So we're going to let you hear what both parties had to say coming up in the next hour of the show, specifically at 10:05. It is an important topic. As kids head back to school, we all want what's best for them. And so what is best for them? We'll talk about it.